I'm Katie, mom to two littles and four angel babies.
And I'm Sarah, an advocate for moms and children of all backgrounds and family types.
With two PhDs between us and collective decades spent unraveling how society shapes women's experiences, we're here to shred the rule books and their relentless tide of expectations. In this safe space, the complexities of motherhood find the candid, unfiltered voice. We're undefining motherhood, one conversation at a time. When I was in the throes of new motherhood with my first baby, Jack, I was struggling big time. And in one of my darkest moments, I received a text message checking on the baby and reminding me to enjoy every moment. I tell this story in more detail in this episode, but the short version is that I felt like such an extreme failure for how much I was struggling when other moms seemed to have it so easy. Since that time, I've learned the truth. The adjustment to a new baby is hard for every parent in different ways. And while some people take to new parenthood more easily than others, absolutely no one enjoys every moment. And yet, people give this advice constantly, and it makes us feel all sorts of negative ways about ourselves. For me, there was guilt. I'd worked so hard to get here, and I knew so many moms would kill to be in my shoes, and here I was, failing. Obviously, there were feelings of failure. Was I a terrible mom? Was something wrong with me? Why was it so much harder for me than it seemed to be for everybody else? In this episode, we're talking about how such sugar-coated advice we so often give new moms can do serious harm to their self-confidence and mental health. Of course, this is a tricky one because the sentiment behind the advice is true. Time passes way more quickly than we imagine in these moments when the days are long and the years are short, and I think we all look back and wish we could have savored some of these moments more. And yet, when we tell that to new parents, we often make them feel lonely, misunderstood, or like failures. It's really nuanced, huh? There's a lot to unpack in this episode. And no matter where you are in your journey, this conversation will be supportive. It helps us understand ourselves and our struggles better, and it gives us tools to support others when they're the ones in the thick of it. So join us, because this is the kind of conversation that can change the world for moms. My three least favorite words for new moms: enjoy every moment. Because you know what it makes me assume? It makes me assume that the person saying it has never been covered in poop. They have never been covered in vomit.
Right.
They have never gone 48 hours straight without sleeping. And they certainly have not been through the trifecta where all three of those things are happening at the same time.
No sleep.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Do you have any stories where you were ever experiencing that trifecta? Or
so there is this moment that comes to mind, and this is where it comes from, why this is my least favorite. I was sitting in my recliner. So this was with Jack. Jack was a newborn, so it was my first baby. Mm-hmm. I was in my recliner. He threw up all the time. But he was what they called happy spitter. Mm-hmm. So, like, no one cared that he was throwing up all the time except for me, who was using full-blown muslin blankets as if they were burp cloths, because burp cloth didn't come close to covering it. And then you take him to the doctor and they're like, it's fine. Everything's fine. No big deal. Mm. I mean, I'm glad he was happy at least, right? He wasn't in pain, but it was kind of obnoxious. And so, yes, I was sitting in my recliner and I am absolutely covered in vomit because I have made the mistake of feeding him and not putting on a giant blanket wrapped around me to catch all of the poop. I am so super sleep deprived. I am starving and dehydrated because I have not eaten all day long. I have a solution we teach for that now with snack stations. But like, first time mama, I didn't know any of this stuff, right? I am just in like this miserable mode. My breasts are so engorged. They're in pain. They're leaking milk. I desperately need to pump because Jack couldn't latch. So I was exclusively pumping. But I'm nap trapped under him
And so I can't do anything. I can't eat. I can't go get water. I can't pump my boobs. Like, I can't do any of the things. I am as hormonal as I can be and as upset and exhausted as I can be. And of course, I had postpartum anxiety that was raging. Right. And I get this text message from one of my friends. And it's not asking about me. And so I think that's like hurtful moment number one. When we only ask about baby, we don't ask about mom. And it says, "Hey, mama, how's baby doing? Enjoy every moment. They don't last forever." And I wanted to throw my phone through a glass window and just watch everything shatter. Like, that is how harsh this felt to me. But you want to know what, in hindsight, the most maddening thing about this advice is?
What?
It's also not necessarily bad advice.
Sure, yeah.
Because everything really is fleeting and temporary and like...
Newborns don't keep.
Ah, babies don't keep. And so they have to be my three least favorite words. Because in the wrong moment, they can make you feel so unfit and unhinged. And yet... It's not technically bad advice. They're true. They're not true. I mean, every moment is not enjoyable. And to pretend that it is not being honest with ourselves or with other mothers. But at the same time.
That time goes by so fast.
You don't realize when you're in it how quickly it's going to go by. I mean, I'm not going to lie. And Jack, sweetie, if you are ever listening to this one day, like, I want to be really clear that this is about mommy's mental health and not about you. But I didn't enjoy very many minutes or moments of my newborn stage with Jack because my postpartum anxiety was so bad. And we'll talk about that at length a different time. But like, it made it really, really hard for me. And so... Because of that, like, that was the most infuriating thing you could say anytime with Jack.
Did you feel like you were kind of robbed of enjoyment?
So that's the thing. Now, yeah. Because when I had Branham, I didn't have postpartum anxiety. And I think there are a number of things we can attribute that to. It could have just been luck, but also I was working with both my own normal psychiatrist and the postpartum psychiatrist I started seeing after I had Jack during my pregnancy with Branham. And so...
You also knew what to expect.
You knew what to expect. So I would love for us to do an episode one day on like the transition from 0 to 1 versus any number after that. Which one's harder is different for different people. But for me, the transition from 1 to 2 was 100,000 times easier than 0 to 1 because of the emotional elements, right? Because I didn't have postpartum anxiety, but also because of the identity shift. For me, going from being someone who was autonomous with her time and her choices, who had independence, who got to make her own decisions, to all of a sudden realizing, like, if I want to run get a smoothie,
somebody else has to do it.
I have to strap a baby in a car to get in the car and drive 3 minutes down the road to park, to get the baby out of the car, to carry him into the restaurant that is only, like, the register is probably 15 feet from the car, but I can't just leave a newborn in a car in Atlanta, so I have to take him in. Then I have to finagle getting back out with the smoothie and with the baby. And I'm not going to lie, having 2 kids right now, I can picture doing all of this very easily. I'm like, oh, well, I would just put the infant carrier this way and I would do this thing and I would put the smoothie in the car first. But as a first-time mom, you don't know those tricks. You haven't figured those things out. So I was really taken aback by how much of my life didn't feel like my own anymore.
And you'd been so used to being in control. Right? Like, everything.
I am such a control freak. Yeah. Like, that
is... Is there anything, like, that you can control about having a newborn?
I mean, I love that question, actually. That's a great question. I think, you know what? This is why I created the Expecting an Organized Planner, actually. So when I wrote that planner, what I really wanted to do was give moms the resources I wished I had had to have things set up to make things easier. So if you have food right next to you in a snack station,
You're going to be less hangry.
You're going to be less hangry. If you have water right next to you in that snack station, you're not going to be dehydrated. You're not going to have the blood sugar drops. So I don't think there's anything we can do to make newborn life go the way we planned, right? But I think there are things we can do to set ourselves up for success when the hard parts come. Make sure we have all the medicines purchased and in one place where we know where they are.
That's a good point.
Because I remember John having to run to Target like 5 minutes before Target closed to get Jack a medicine because he had a fever. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know why do I give a baby with a fever? I don't know what to do. You know, I think that kind of preparation, like that's literally why I created that planner. So I think that that's one way you can have some simple little elements of control. One thing I did that gave me a lot of control during that time with Jack, and I didn't do this with Branham for a number of reasons, but with Jack was I actually scheduled someone to come over once John went back to work. I scheduled someone to come to my house every single day and visit me, a friend. And that
this was with Branham or Jack?
With Jack.
Okay.
And that was a luxury that I had because I was teaching at Georgia Tech and all of my best friends taught college. And Jack was born in June.
Yes.
So
we were all available.
When John was back in school, back at work, sorry, on July 15th, all my friends who taught college still had 4 more weeks. So you would come,
yes,
Molly would come, Rebecca, like I had this list
Mary
of people
Catherine,
and
yeah.
Someone was scheduled every single day. And the reason I did that is because one, postpartum anxiety manifests in a lot of ways. One of mine was that I didn't feel capable of taking care of him. A lot of moms with postpartum anxiety don't want to, they don't want anyone else to have their baby because they don't believe the baby's safe with anyone but them. I was the opposite. I believed I was incapable of taking care of him. And so I wanted someone else there. But it was also because I knew that while they were there, I could get food, I could get a drink, and I could hook up to the breast pump. So worst comes to worst, if he didn't want to nap anywhere but me all day, I was going to be able to pump and eat. And like that was the thing that I needed. So that helped me. Most people aren't lucky enough to have that. And certainly with Branham, I didn't have that. But at that point, I had more mom friends and from different arenas. I also had a babysitter who we trusted at that point. You know, I didn't know how to find a babysitter when I had Jack. With Branham, we already had a babysitter. And so I actually had that babysitter pick him up from school. And then after she dropped Jack off from school, she would stay and she would wash pump parts if there were any. I didn't have as much because I nursed Branham more. She would do the dishes. She would take out the trash and then she would leave. Like it was small stuff, but it's small stuff that adds up to so much. So, you know, one thing I think we can do to give ourselves some control there is figure out, are there any people or support systems we can put in place? One of the best ones tends to be like, do you just have a teenager down the street who you can pay $10 an hour to come to your house 1 hour a day, 3 days a week, and empty your diaper pails and change over the laundry and change over the dishes? And like, you know, it all depends. It depends on your support system and your circumstances. But I think those are the little things we can control. And then we just have to know how out of control it is. We can't control if feeding goes the way we want, if sleeping goes the way we want. If we're the kind of parent we thought we'd be, we can't control any of these things. God knows we can't control our mental health.
Right. So do you feel like having these systems in place helps you? I know enjoy every moment is our topic.
Yeah.
But those systems do help you enjoy things a little bit more, right?
They do. Like, they do. So
they help you. When you have support, it's easier
to be in the
moment.
But honestly, I had more support with Jack than I did with Branham. Because I physically required it. Like I created, and I know there are moms out there who are hearing this and thinking, well, I wish I could have created it. And mama, like, I feel for you. It worked out, the timing and the way that my friends were, that it worked. And thankfully they all came in. But, you know, I actually had less support with Branham, but I still enjoyed more moments. And a big part of that was that I had prepared better. A big part of that was that I understood how much I didn't have control over. And a big part of it was just that I didn't have postpartum anxiety. And I mean, I was on medication, which I was not with Jack. I stayed medicated through my whole pregnancy with Branham, and I'm thankful I did. But, you know, the thing about that is that having that postpartum experience with Branham really made me very sad for the moments that I missed with Jack. And it really complicated this term for me, this enjoy every moment term, because it was like, I still can't enjoy every moment. Branham is hitting her twos more and more by the day. And I do not enjoy the bedtime tantrums every night. But like, I enjoyed so much more with her in a way that I couldn't have even imagined the first time around. That it also, yeah, I feel robbed by my own brain and mental health struggles. Yes.
Having known you for both pregnancies and both postpartum terms, it was night and day. I mean, I remember with Jack coming over to your house and you had to go to the lactation consultant, right? And so you were so anxious that you could not drive him to your consultation, right? Like, I had to drive and you had to be looking at him in the backseat.
Literally, I had to be in the backseat with him, watching his head positioning, seeing that he was breathing. Like,
I think that's the moment I realized how bad it was for you.
And you know what's funny? That was around, I believe, week five. I was already.
He was tiny.
I was 3 weeks into Zoloft at that point and infinitely better than I had been in the weeks before. Not where I wanted to be yet, but I was infinitely better by that point. And I couldn't
put him in the car. Part of saying enjoy every moment to people is like, you just don't know what they're going through, right?
That's
like,
the thing. You just don't know what they're going through,
you
right?
You are physically incapable of enjoying it.
Exactly. Exactly. I was physically incapable of enjoying it. And so if we say it to mom in that moment.
Yeah, you make her feel bad.
It's harmful, right?
Right.
But then sometimes is it the right thing to say?
I don't know.
If someone said it at the right moment with Brandon, it might have made me feel supported. Okay, so this is so nuanced. I'll let you know what? This one's going to be a doozy. Get comfy here with me. This episode is sponsored by G8 by SNP Therapeutics, providing genetics-powered nutrition tailored for every stage of the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journeys. Imagine a world where mothers have more control over their health and their baby's development, where maternal health isn't just a hashtag, it's something that really matters. This is the dream G8 is turning into a reality. Through personalized nutrition insights, G8 helped me learn exactly how my body processes and struggles to process different essential vitamins and nutrients. Their focus is on the nutrients that are most essential for babies' cognitive development, making them a dream for moms who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or nursing. And they didn't stop there. They gave me personalized recommendations for how to adjust my daily intakes, and their new prenatal vitamin adjusts to the needs they see most often in moms. Their approach isn't just about supplements or tests. It's about understanding and nurturing our unique bodies during some of life's most crucial phases. G8 gives me hope for a future where every mother can feel empowered and supported in her healthcare. Check them out at undefiningmotherhood.com/G8 and use code undefiningmotherhood10 for 10% off.
All right. So is there ever a good time to tell a new mom to enjoy every moment?
You know, it's such a loaded question. I don't know is like the straight answer, but let's go deeper than that. So I think it really depends on two things. One, what is the mental state of the mom in that moment? And two, what is your intention in asking or in saying it, right? Like, I think this is the kind of statement or the kind of advice where we want to think before we speak. So if you are walking past that sweet mama with her new baby in the grocery store, hard no.
I was about to say, that seems like when it gets said the most.
It really, honestly, I think might be. So, like, if it's a stranger, because you don't know where she is. You don't know how things are going. And I have a lot of feelings on how this makes people feel that we can talk about if they're not enjoying it. So I think that's part of it. Maybe it's not something we say via text message, because you can't read the room. But if you're in person and you're visiting and she genuinely seems to be relishing new motherhood, I mean, maybe it's okay to say, you know what, enjoy every moment you can. Maybe that's the addendum,
right? Yeah.
Enjoy every moment you can because it's so fleeting. I'm so glad to see that you're able to enjoy a lot of this. So maybe that's it. And then I think also, why are you saying it? Because there's the really well-intentioned reason for saying it that I think is a bad reason. And that is, you've been there, you know how fleeting it is, and you just want her to understand. But I think there are better ways we can help people know how fleeting it is without necessarily saying these three words at the wrong time, right?
So what if you just acknowledge how hard it is? Just
say, like,
I see you, you know, loving on your baby and enjoying her, but I just want to say, I know this isn't the full experience, right? Like,
yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, what I will say is, because my experience with Jack was so difficult, that everyone I knew after he was born, I kind of approached with like a, how you doing? I know it's rough. And every now and then, it was clear that wasn't the right thing to say to someone. They were like, no, it's not that rough. Like, I'm not. So maybe that's what it is. Or maybe it's like, you know, enjoy every moment that you can. If I'm telling you that because I can tell that you're enjoying a lot. But if I'm telling you that because I know how fleeting it is and I feel like you're complaining too much and you don't understand how fleeting it is, zip it. Because that's when you're saying it for you and not for the mom. And I think that's the crux of it, right?
It's who, like, are you saying it for?
Who is this being said for? And if it's being said for the mom, then it must follow that she is in the emotional state where she is really enjoying and she is really feeling it. But I don't know. I would love to hear your thoughts on this in the comments, because my thought is still the better way, better than enjoy every moment, would perhaps be, I'm glad to see you able to enjoy so many moments, or enjoy or relish these moments when you can, because we can't always. And that's also worth acknowledging. My only concern with that is, like, are we even equipped to know when someone is mentally there? And I think that's the, like, I don't know. Do you feel like most people could just go visit a friend with their baby and spend 5 or 10 minutes with them and know what that mom's emotional state truly is?
No, I think because a lot of women hide it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want your friends and family, even if they're close, to even have like an inkling that you're not doing a good job. Right?
Yes.
Like, we're so conditioned to want to excel at everything that we touch. And the same goes for having kids, right? Like, you don't want people to see you in a state where you feel like you're failing at something that you've been told your body was designed to do.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, it makes me think of during my postpartum with Jack, when, like, we've established I was so far from okay. So far from okay. And my friend Becca came to visit. And she is the person I have known the longest in my life. So she knows my moods, my emotions, my cues, same in reverse. She had had terrible postpartum depression with her daughter and had been very vocal about it. And when I mentioned postpartum anxiety to her later, she said, oh my God, I had no idea. I thought you seemed so pulled together and thriving. And, you know, this is the first time I've ever really thought back on that. Like, what kind of show was I putting on without even knowing I was doing it? This isn't someone I feel the need to put on a show for. So, like, what kind of show was I just inherently putting on, that good, look at me, I'm a good mom face?
You're just so used to keeping it together.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe the answer is,
it's hard to know.
It's hard to know. And maybe we should always be really careful. Maybe that's the thing. We should always be really careful. It should always at least be a qualified, like, enjoy the moments you can. you know, it makes you think of the days are long and the years are short, right? And that's one that I always felt very seen by. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd love to hear if others have felt that way too. But for me, it was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm crying because Jack is going up in a swaddle size because he's no longer swaddled. Because now he's in a sleep sack. Because now look at how big the sleep sack is. I am in literal tears over these things. And yet, I'm enjoying very few moments. And so the nostalgia and the recognition of how fleeting it is, it can all coexist.
At the same time,
it
yes.
It can exist at the same time. And I think that's the thing, right? Like, we as a society have a really hard time understanding that two seemingly opposing things mm-hmm. can be true at once.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. In general.
Yeah. It doesn't have to apply to newborns,
no.
right?
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, you know, we can experience both grief and joy. At the same and time. Yep. Often if we're grieving, we're feeling guilty for experiencing joy. But we shouldn't, because you can feel both. We feel conflicting emotions every single day. And that is human, and that is normal. And so I guess maybe that's part of what we need to get a little more comfortable with, is recognizing, like, okay, two things can be true at once. It can be true that this is fleeting. Mm-hmm. Everything is a phase. And perhaps someone, as the more experienced parent, wants to help the other person understand that it's a phase. But also, and also, we don't need a but there, right? Because these are not, they don't have to be conflicting, even though we talk about them like they're conflicting. And also, it's hard. It's really, really, really hard. And, you know, I think that also applies. I hear this a lot to moms as kids get older, where toddler moms will say, oh, you just think the newborn days are hard. And then parents of teenagers are like, yeah, I just thought it was hard when they were a toddler throwing the tantrums. It can be true.
Right.
That both are hard and also, both bring joy.
We don't have to have a hard off, right?
Like, right. Yeah. We don't. Yeah. In the loss community, we call it the grief Olympics. We don't have to have grief definitely. Olympics. Like, we don't have, this is not a game of trying to one-up each other on who has it the hardest,
the worst,
newborn mom or the toddler mom or the teen mom or whatever.
It all sucks.
It all sucks, and it's all joyful
and lovely.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I think that's the key, is recognizing these things can exist together and then being really honest with people in a way that meets them where they are. Like, it makes, like, I wonder, when Becca and I were talking and she thought I was doing so great, I wonder what would have happened if she had looked at me and said, so how are you really? Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't assume I'm doing terribly. If I'm doing great, I can say, no, really, I'm doing great. But then it would have opened a door.
Do you think that's more of an approach for first-time moms too? Because I feel like sometimes when I think back on your postpartum period with Jack, I felt like you didn't know how you were doing sometimes. Like, you didn't know how to articulate it or how to.
I didn't know how to articulate
it. Because it was your first experience.
Any of it. But I think the reality for me was that I was afraid to articulate any of it. So, okay, this is one of the reasons I think these words are so maddening to hear when you are not in a place to hear them, particularly when you're hearing them from experienced parents. Because it makes you wonder if it's easier for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Is something wrong with me that you got to enjoy every moment and I can't? Am I defective? It goes back to the idea we've been talking about all season of womanhood. Ideologically, we've been taught that it equals motherhood. Well, if womanhood equals motherhood,
I'm miserable,
and you're telling me I should be enjoying every moment, am I a terrible mother? Am I failing at, like, the one thing I'm supposed to be good at? And the reality is, even the people saying it didn't enjoy every moment. But when you look back on it, you remember the good moments. because that's what our brains
you're wired to do,
yeah. are wired to remember. I mean, honestly, like, we got to keep populating the world. I think if you asked everyone at 1 week postpartum
if they wanted
to just go ahead and do it again, they'd be like, absolutely not.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, I do think we're wired not to think about it and to kind of forget about some mm-hmm. of the hard parts. I mean, I wrote an article recently about dealing with postpartum anxiety and ways to support moms going through it. And I got really, really vulnerable about my experience with Jack. And you were there. You saw it. I put off writing this article for as long as I possibly could. And then when I finally wrote it, I just sobbed. And then I didn't use a single word I'd written in the actual article because it wasn't about the article. It was about letting myself actually go back to that mental state.
Access it, yeah.
And access it. And, like, I want to remember Jack being a newborn as this precious, beautiful time when I got to snuggle my little boy. And there were moments of that, but honestly, there were very few of them. So, yeah, I think that's just – it goes back to the feelings of failure, the expectations we place on ourselves, and then what are we even going to allow ourselves to remember? Maybe part of the reason we need to make ourselves go back and access those moments is so we can better support moms who are in it right now.
Right. Do you think this has a particular effect on lost moms?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to get into that because I feel like enjoy every moment to someone who has worked so hard to conceive and to carry a baby. And then, you know, you're in the thick of it and you've got poop and vomit on you and you're 100% not enjoying it and someone says that to you. Do you think that makes you feel even worse? Because you've worked so hard to get there, right?
So two things I want to say in response to that. Number one is fertility trauma, which of course includes miscarriage and of course includes recurrent pregnancy loss, increases your risk of postpartum or perinatal while you're pregnant mood disorders.
Is that the same for IVF?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would have to go back to look at the research to explain specifically. But off the top of my head, I think the thing is trauma. So there are instances where people are doing IVF. Like, I know someone who did IVF because one of the parents carries a very extremely difficult and deadly disease, and they wanted to pre-screen their embryos for that. And I'm not going to pretend that doesn't come with its own level of trauma. It does. But if you're choosing IVF from the beginning and you're not going through the trauma of the fertility struggle, I don't know if that has a specific impact.
Yeah,
but if you're
thinking about IVF, right? And I feel like as the person who would carry a baby, mm-hmm. just the trauma or the feeling surrounding the stakes of it, right? Because it's so expensive.
Yes.
It's so, you know, there's so much pressure.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, if you really worked that hard to make a baby and to carry a baby, to get to the point where someone's like, enjoy every moment. And you're like, well, this actually really sucks. You know, like, there's that feeling.
No, I think you're right. Because IVF puts your body through so much. And that's something that people don't realize. They're like, oh, easy way. You just get to make your own baby. No.
And it's like it's, almost will bankrupt
you. It's very expensive. It's very difficult on your body. And it is not a guarantee that you're going to have a baby. And actually, you know, I think part of the struggle and the trauma, at least for me and for a lot of women in my community, comes from feeling that your body is defective in some way. And so the story I just told probably has the same level of trauma. I'm thinking back now, like, how could I have used that as an example? That's a terrible example. Of course this person has gone through trauma deciding how they can do what's best for their babies based on their own genes and their own grief mm-hmm. over their own genes. And like, yeah. So I think I would venture, and I would have to go back and do the research, any kind of assisted reproductive technology counts as trauma. Whatever got you there, it was probably very traumatic. Obviously loss counts. So that's one thing. Your risk is already increased. The other thing is, when you have worked so, so hard to get there.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
What you have likely done is you've cultivated a community of people who are also working so, so hard to get there. And not all of them are there yet. And you don't know if they're going to be. And so the level of guilt over not enjoying every moment. I mean, I remember seeing people's faces and thinking, why am I reacting this way when she would give anything to be in my shoes right now? Like, I didn't deserve to struggle because there were other moms who were still trying to get there so badly. And I think, and most of the specialists who I've spoken with about this hypothesize that that's probably a big part of the risk, that added risk of the postpartum or perinatal mood disorder, is that when you don't enjoy it, you experience such extreme guilt.
Right. Mm-hmm. For not enjoying
it. Enjoying it. And yeah, then these words are going to absolutely.
But that goes back to our whole point about two things being able to exist at one time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can feel extreme gratitude for, you know, the process and for actually getting pregnant and carrying a baby.
100%.
And you can experience the hardness and the difficulty of whatever's happening to you in that present moment.
Exactly.
You know, 48 hours not sleeping or whatever.
Exactly. It's all valid and it's all a struggle.
You say something on our website a lot when you write is that your feelings are valid.
Your feelings are valid.
Whatever they are.
Yeah. They're valid. Like, you deserve to feel them. And so I think maybe that's a big part of where the problem with this phrase comes in, is that we really need to grant moms the permission slip, and all parents, not just moms. We need to be granting parents the permission to feel whatever it is that they're feeling, and to recognize that if they open up to people about those feelings, they shouldn't have to worry about feeling judged. They shouldn't have to worry. And I really did. Like, I was feeling so deeply dark during those early days that people who would normally be my very safe people, I did not feel comfortable saying out loud the things that I was thinking to. I felt comfortable with my therapist, who I had been seeing for over 10 years. And even that was difficult. So, I think that's a really, really huge part of it.
So what do we say? I mean, one of the disclaimers that we put out when we started this podcast was, like, we're not trying to bash everyone and anyone who says things like, enjoy every moment to you.
Yes.
We're just trying to offer kind of a new glossary, a new vocabulary.
Like, yes.
What do we tell people to say? Enjoy every moment you can. And is there anything else?
I personally really am a big fan of the days are long, but the years are short. Because I think it's very validating of both experiences. I think it's okay and even good to remind parents, especially first-time parents, that it is a phase, but not to say it in a dismissive way. Like, you don't say,
this too shall pass.
Oh, this too shall pass. It's just a phase. Everyone goes. But to say, look, it's really, really hard. I want you to know somewhere in your brain that it is a phase. I have this very distinct memory with Jack, and it's such a stupid story to tell. It's hilarious. But I felt this in my bones at the time. So I'm from the South. I was raised in Georgia. I am the black sheep of the family who did not go to the University of Georgia. I grew up going to the games. If we didn't go to a game, we were watching a game. I spent every weekend that there was a home game in Athens when I was in college, even though I didn't go there because I went to a small school and, like, our football kind of sucked. No offense to anyone who went to Furman, but Athens is cooler on football days. And so, like, I'm a big Georgia fan. Mm-hmm. I also am an extraordinarily big fan of chicken wings.
Got it.
Love a chicken wing. Love it. Like, one of my favorite things in the world. Top comfort food, for sure. So I'm postpartum anxiety. I need comfort, right? I want my top comfort food. I remember wanting chicken wings, ordering them because I wanted my comfort food. And so this specific order is chicken wings, like normal buffalo wings and blue cheese chips. And the second they arrived, Jack woke up from his nap and he wanted to be held, and this needed to happen.
What, you can't eat a chicken wing on top of a baby?
And then I, exactly. And then with the spicy kind, yeah, right, exactly. Where you're getting the spice on your fingers, and then you get it into his little eye or on his little skin. And so then I gave him to John, but he really didn't want to be with John at that moment. He wanted to be with me at that moment. And I had this massive breakdown over the fact that football season was coming. Mm-hmm. And I was never again in my entire life going to be able to sit down and watch a football game and eat a chicken wing. And you know what? By the latter half of the fall, I knew his nap schedule well enough that I could very easily sit down and watch part of a game and eat a chicken wing. Not the whole thing, but part of it. And then he got old enough where I could watch the whole game. I could just be like, Jack, here's your iPad. We're watching football. And then I had Brandon. And so now we're kind of over again. But like, this is the extent to which I felt the permanence of this change. And that was just simply incorrect. And yes, part of that may have been a product of postpartum anxiety. But I think part of what made postpartum with Brandon so much easier was the true understanding that it really is all a phase. The joyful moments will fleet and I should enjoy them. And the terrible moments will end and they will no longer be terrible, or they will be a different kind of terrible or a different kind of joy. So I think that's a way that we can acknowledge this for parents, is if we're doing it in a loving way, saying, hey, this sucks. This is hard. You're in the thick of it. I am here. And I also just want you to know somewhere in the back of your brain, it's not going to be this way forever, even though it feels.
Yeah. It that seems way like now. What you're describing is like, it's okay to be present in the bad moments and in the joyful ones. Yes. Right. Like, I hope you can find the capacity to be present for all of it. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's okay to be present in all of those feelings. And I think you should, because if you're not present in the hard moments, what's probably happening is that you're pushing those down and you're going to have to come back and face that at some point. Now, sometimes that might just be what survival mechanism requires, and that's okay. But I think where, to the extent that you have the capacity, being present in all of the moments and just parents acknowledging to other parents that it's hard. So it reminds me of a story, and I think this will be a good place to wrap up. I shared this story recently in an article, but it really bears reiterating here. So my cousin Emily had her first child 1 month before Brandon was born. And when they were a couple of months old, we met halfway between where we live, because we're about 2 hours apart.
With both babies.
Uh-huh. And we got the girls together. We have cute little pictures of them together where, of course, they can't even sit up. So mm-hmm. they're just like lying on the floor, not knowing the other one exists.
Little potatoes.
But, you know, it was a good, like, just moms needing to release and have some adult time. That's a huge thing for new moms, is needing adult time, new parents in general. But especially if you're on leave, you need adult time. And we were both still on leave at this point. And so we met up and we were talking, and she seemed to be doing great. And I said, you know, how are you? And she was like, you know, I'm good. Like, this part of it's hard and blah, blah, blah. But on the whole, I'm good. And I said, how are you really? And she said, you know, like, really, I'm actually doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's amazing. Like, I'm so thankful to hear that. And I'm kind of like, it kind of stuns me when people say that, because that's been so different from my on average experience. And she said, you know what I think has been the game changer for me? She said, when my daughter was just a couple of days old, someone called me, and they didn't call to ask about the baby. They called to check on me. And they asked the same question you just asked. How are you really? And I was not so good at that moment. And so I was open about the good parts and the bad parts. And what this person said to me, I think, is the reason that I have been so okay ever since. And what she said was, I want you to know that it's okay and it's good to enjoy every moment that you can. And I also want you to know
that it's okay to sometimes wonder if you have made a huge mistake. And the fact that you wonder it doesn't mean you have. I just want you to know you're not alone. And I was in tears listening to this, and I was in my better postpartum experience. But it felt like this permission slip that she was crediting with making her new mom experience so much easier is what I needed. I needed someone to say, it's okay to love it. It's okay to hate it. It's okay to wonder if you made a mistake. It's okay to have feelings of regret. If these feelings are the overwhelming feelings, then yes, you need to talk to a doctor. If you are predominantly feeling regret, you need to talk to a doctor. But for someone to have just said, we all feel all of these things
at one time.
Sometimes. Yeah. And that's fine. I think that is the permission slip that is so necessary. And it's the permission slip that's left out of enjoy every moment. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Undefining Motherhood podcast. It's been an honor to share this time with you. Remember, you're not just a listener, you're an essential part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, I have three simple requests for how you can help us grow. First, subscribe wherever you listened so you don't miss an episode. Second, we'd love it if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, as that's one of the most important ways we can grow and share our message and community. And finally, we'd love to hear from you. Jump over to Instagram and find us at Undefining Motherhood, where you'll see a post about this week's episode where we can continue the conversation. Thank you for being a part of the Undefining Motherhood community, where together we're making change. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.